Hello and welcome to Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures. I'm Jason.
I'm Ashley.
And welcome to a special road edition of the podcast. You guys, you know, we've been doing this the last couple years when Ashley and I go on fun road trips. We bring the microphones along and we record. And what are we talking about today, Ashley?
Today we have a topic that comes from a listener comment. And this comes from our good friend Adam Roberson, who says, "Why is the super orphan trope still a constant trend and possible crutch for writers to use when creating certain characters? Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, James Bond, Harry Potter, etc. This includes characters who are half orphaned, who only have one parent, like Static from Static Shock, is raised by a single father. Do you think there should be more stories where the parents of the lead character should have some more involvement in the story, such as the initial run of Jaime Reyes' Blue Beetle or Mark Grayson' Invincible? Or do you believe that having characters who are not around better... better strengthen their impact by having other characters to look up to?"
By the way, we should also mention this is the personal podcast where we get more personal.
Yes.
"Hello, friends. The gate is open wide. Walk right in," or something like that, as some people on the podcast say.
"Hello, friends."
All right, Ashley, there's a lot in that.
There is a lot in that. Also, Adam is a Disney employee, which Disney loves the super orphan trope too.
So I was going to say, like, this is not exclusive to superheroes, I think. I think this is also, like, every Disney princess of the last 30 years doesn't have two parents, I believe.
Well, if we're looking to cast stones from our glassed house, Jupiter Jet, Tamsin Coon, Trecrew, having dead parents.
Well, super best friend. Both parents are alive, baby.
Aurora's parents, I've never thought about for 1 second, so who knows? They're probably
Are they alive
dead.
Or dead? I'm going to put you on the spot right now. You have to answer. Are they alive or dead?
They're probably
dead. Are they alive? Are you going to kill them?
Honestly,
kill them on the air right now, Ashley.
We're never going to see them.
Kill them on the air.
Sure, they're dead.
Oh, my God, Ashley
just did it. The Northern Lights themselves.
I think you know where it comes from, everybody. I think you know exactly where it comes from.
That's why she's got a hot, older male father figure.
Oh, boy. That's some daddy issues I didn't think this podcast was going to explore.
There you go. But if we're truly looking to cast aspersions, I suppose we should cast aspersions all the way back to Grimm's fairy tales, where the brothers Grimm killed a lot of people. And in the original folk stories upon which many brothers Grimm's stories are based, it was usually the mother who was evil, because patriarchy, and they thought that was a little too nasty, so they rewrote it as the stepmother. So they are responsible for the evil stepmother trope that we see
I think that's where it came from.
I think that is where it was popularized, certainly.
Because I can't think of any other... Well, I mean, there's lots of characters in literature. I mean, Wendy from Peter Pan
has two nice parents.
Well, she does have two nice parents. Okay, I thought Mom was gone.
No, Mrs. Darling is very much there.
Okay.
All the Darling children's have, but Peter doesn't have parents.
Peter
Pan?
Well, yes. That's
Lost Boys, Slightly, who's kind of Peter's lieutenant, was raised in an orphanage.
Well, like I said, we don't know anything about Sherlock Holmes' parents. We know he has a brother. We know he has a brother.
His parents are dead.
You know, but the parents don't factor into his origin.
Well, he's an adult by that time.
Yes.
So it doesn't particularly matter.
So I do think it is superheroes, but yeah, it is Grimm's fairy tales. And, you know, superheroes and comic books do have a big connection to fairy tales, more so than some people would like to think they do.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
It's weird. Like, when you actually think about superhero comic books, I've always said that superhero comics owe more to soap operas and fairy tales than anything else.
I would definitely agree. And myths, they're modern myths, to use the Grant Morrison.
All the, like, mythic stuff. So, like, all myths do run on tropes quite a bit.
Yep.
Because they had to be shorthand to be understood quickly so that you would understand the allegory.
A lot of great heroes, a lot of, like, Greco-Roman heroes certainly don't have a father if their dad was Zeus and he raped their human mother.
Yes.
But a lot of them don't have a full set of functioning parents.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about this. I mean, well, it's hard with this one because a lot of these characters were created that Adam mentioned here.
Almost 100 years ago.
Well, 80. But
yeah.
Spider-Man was created 60 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean the Batman and Superman of it all.
Yeah, they're all like all these golden age people. Yeah, they are they're of a very different mindset. And also it was from a period of time where I don't think writers were I don't think comic book writers were checking on the other comic book writers to see what they were doing, which is a big thing why I think many golden age superheroes are kind of all the same. Like when you think about it, like they're all like sort of Superman copies or Phantom copies or Doc Savage copies.
Yeah.
Because I think the only ones they would really check out were the ones that sold well.
I'm also not certain that the creators at that time were as concerned with legacy or trope or differentiating themselves or how they stood up next to literature. I think that's a very
post 1985
kind of view of comic books. And of course, that's where we live right now, which is why we're having
this discussion. I also think it's a post internet.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of viewpoint. And I don't think they really care. I don't think a lot of them really cared or were that concerned about it. So that's another factor in this conversation. But like, I mean, let's just go to our personal opinions here. Let's talk about, I mean, because are there any other super orphans outside of the main big dogs, like the Superman, the Spider-Man?
Doesn't have a father, point blank, period.
Yep.
Hal Jordan has at least a dead dad.
It was retconned that he had a dead dad.
Okay, but contemporary Hal Jordan has a dead dad.
Yep, but that was
when we talk about Hal Jordan, that is like from our contemporary perspective. And Martian Manhunter is definitely an orphan.
Yep, Martian Manhunter is an orphan.
His whole peoples are dead.
Barry Allen is now an orphan. That was a retcon as well.
That's true. Arthur Curry doesn't know his mother.
That's correct, but his mother is not dead.
No, but she was absentee.
That is correct.
Black Canary, I believe, was raised by a single mom.
Yes.
Oliver Queen, dead dad.
Oliver Queen, dead dad. That's true. Yep.
I'm just trying to think about.
Let's go on Marvel side. Let's go Spider-Man. We'll see. We're all Silver Age characters, and you know.
Yeah. Dead parents. Cap, dead parents.
Well, yeah, but they like don't have anything to do with his origin, really.
No, but that's true. But. Still had dead parents.
Okay. Iron Man, dead dad and dead mom, but also has nothing to do with his origin.
Yeah. Reed Richards?
Reed Richards' dad is alive. His mom is dead, but also has nothing to do with his origin.
Yeah.
The parents do not contribute to his origin at all.
Wolverine, dead parents.
Because he's 100
because
years
of time,
old.
But still dead.
Yeah, I mean, even think about the X-Men, Professor X.
They're all abandoned by their parents.
Well, Professor X, like, I can't even tell you if they've done a story about his mom or...
I'm sure they have,
because Juggernaut is his stepbrother.
That's right.
But also, again, I don't think if that contributes at all to his origin. So it's interesting, on the Marvel side, we're finding out, with the exception of, like, Peter Parker, that, like... Yeah, their parents are dead, but
because Peter Parker was a copy of Dick Grayson.
but DC's the one who's all the orphans.
I think the reason that the super orphan trope was popularized as superheroes is because you have to explain to your audience, even a comic book reading audience where we're willing to suspend our disbelief a little bit.
Yes.
You have to explain to them why somebody would dress up like a superhero and even with powers.
Yep.
And subject themselves to this.
To do this crazy or bonkers stuff.
And even if you've never lost somebody, you understand that grief is really hard and it changes people and it changes the way we interact with the world around us. And I just think it's a shorthand, and perhaps by contemporary standards, it's a lazy shorthand. For why, but also it alleviates the issue of, well, if you have a family, you have to worry about what will happen to them, to go back to the Jaime Reyes example of it all, right?
Yeah.
Jaime spends a lot of time protecting his family and worrying about his family, and villains get to him through his family, whereas, like, Bruce Wayne, when Batman starts, is a loner. It's
mm-hmm.
just him and Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really convenient way to, like, not have to tell anybody who they are or where they're going at night. It's also why Bruce Wayne's a bachelor until he shacks up with Selina.
Well, it's also, when you think about it, what's the most universal thing in the world? We all have parents.
Life and death.
We all have parents.
Yeah.
So kill the parents, and kind of everybody can understand that.
Yeah.
But also, it is that idea, right, where in stories, we always think about well, what's the hidden trauma or the hidden fear, like you said, that makes them like dress up in these spandexy tights and do these crazy things or these bonker things, excuse me. And killing the parents right in front of you, or like making you the last of your species, which is what Clark Kent is.
Yep.
And Martian Manhunter, it becomes very easy to do that.
I mean, even a character like Black Lightning, like his father dies very viciously. Mm-hmm. So
it is a little lazy in
a contemporary setting.
In modern times, yes. In modern times. But it's only because the most famous examples of superheroes have this.
Yeah.
And it is a problem when you are working in that medium, when people are always going to compare you to that. They will always compare you to the originators, the progenitors, which are Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, all those guys.
I would also argue, because Adam gave Invincible as an example, in Invincible, the first volume is called Family Matters, and the idea of family with characters that are introduced like Oliver and Kid Omni-Man is explored throughout the story, but you could also argue that he has a negligent or certainly absentee father at times with Omni-Man.
He does after the first arc. I mean, I would say he's not negligent. He's almost like the dad that has two families. Like when you hear those stories about like men who have the second family, like in Albuquerque.
Yeah, but he also like beats the ever loving snot out of his son.
He does, but that's after the reveal.
Yes.
So like that has nothing to do with their actual family life. That is like that is after an inciting incident.
That's true.
So you can't track that along with that he was a negligent farmer, a father, as far as we see.
He was a negligent farmer.
He probably was a negligent farmer. He didn't care to the potatoes that many times, and you know, space potatoes need a lot of water and a lot of grooming.
Do you think they're purple like so many of the Invincible aliens?
Yes, of course they're purple.
I see, and sometimes
orange.
Oh.
Vulturemite potatoes are high in fiber, and they're very nutritious, and they're low in carbs, unlike Earth potatoes.
So they're yams.
Yes.
Sweet potatoes.
But they taste like potatoes.
Okay.
So the Vulturemites and the Earthlings, we love
them. We have purple potatoes, you know.
But they're not as good as Vulturemite potatoes.
No, they won't make you fly.
He's not a negligent father. Like, he's actually a loving father. He's more of the father with a double identity is who he is.
Yeah.
Because the man that beats Mark up is kind of who he really is.
Yeah.
You know, so
the conqueror.
But I don't think he's negligent. He's actually a loving father when you see all those scenes, which is, I think, that's where the trauma in Invincible comes along, because like Mark and the reader learns that he didn't know this man at all.
Yeah, and you kind of stray into that like abuse storyline of like, does someone love you if they hit you?
Well, and also like, does somebody love you if basically he was lying to you his entire life?
And used you as an experiment if your very existence was just like...
Yes.
It's kind of like what Debbie goes through, where she has to sort of be like, did he ever love me?
You mean Invincible's mom?
Yeah, her name is Debbie.
Well, I just wanted to clarify for the listeners who may not have no clue who Debbie was.
Her name is Debbie.
You just talked about Debbie, and I didn't know if Debbie
was... Deborah Grayson.
If Debbie was the potato farmer in our Vulturemite ranching experiment.
She's Mrs. Potato Farmer.
She's Mrs. Debbie Potato Farmer.
Mrs. Debbie Potato Farmer. Voiced by Sandra Oh.
Fine.
Icon.
We need a voice of our potato farmer?
Well, she's voiced by Sandra Oh in the cartoon.
Well, I'm saying, like, our potato farmer's not a real person? We need a voice for this person?
Yes.
Okay. So like, I don't know, what else there is to say about this subject.
I will tack on to this conversation that I do think, and you mentioned that you'd seen somebody tweet a version of this recently, but I can't remember who you attributed to.
Sure.
I do think that if you are like a big name, top tier superhero, that we don't need to see your tragic origin story no more.
So that was in specific to movies.
Yeah.
And I saw, I believe it was Lon Harris of Screen Junkies is who tweeted that. And yes, he said something to the aversion of the thing he liked the most about the Batman was is that we just jumped in like it was year two and we went along with this. And he kind of thinks that unless you are going to do something very unique and very amazing with the superhero origin, which is Space Orphan is not super unique and super amazing, that we should just jump in and you already have like 10 rogues and we're there. which...
Do you agree or disagree?
There's pluses and minuses to both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say that in the current lexicon of superhero movies, as a genre, he's probably correct.
Like, do we need another Wolverine origin?
Well, we've only gotten one. So, we've only gotten one
in 20 Wolverine movies. We've read that. Like, X2 is a Wolverine origin story.
Yeah, sort of.
X-Men Origins Wolverine
is, to me, the one that really, lays it in. I mean,
that really boring Wolverine movie where he fights Silver Samurai is kind of a Wolverine origin.
Not at all. No, it's not. No, it's not, Ashley. The X2, the Wolverine, there's so many damn Wolverines movies.
Yeah.
Too many, in my opinion. The Wolverine is him... It's like a flashback to specifically the story of the guy that he met during Hiroshima.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like him protecting... It's sort of like... The Wolverine is sort of like a gangster ninja. It's the closest we've ever gotten to the Frank Miller, Chris Claremont.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't...
Well, it is nominally that, but it's a much more boring version of that.
I agree. But I would even argue that X2, you were talking about, that's a Wolverine origin movie. I was like, it's sort of a like... It alludes to a Wolverine origin, but it doesn't give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
It just says, like, this is the guy that gave him the claws, or this is the guy that made him the bad guy.
Yeah.
And even Wolverine Origins does a bad job of the Wolverine origin. It's a terrible guy.
Okay, then let me rephrase
origin.
It. Yep. Do we need any more Spider-Man origins?
Definitely not. We don't need any more Spider-Man origins, which is the biggest reason why I think The Amazing Spider-Man didn't work.
Yeah.
Because we redid a Spider-Man origin, and you were kind of like, well, you're never going to beat the Sam Raimi one.
I mean, Spider-Verse did Miles' origin like 3 times, and we got 2 Peter Parkers in Spider-Verse, and we didn't get either of their origins, hardly.
Well, we did, but we got it in the very flash forward. Like, that was the thing that was clever about Spider-Verse. We got the origin, but it did it in a unique way where it's like, hold on, one more time. Here it is. And then we got the origin. And I would argue that Miles doesn't really count because he's a brand new character.
Well, I would say Miles gets 2 because Miles is the lead character of the movie. So the whole movie is really him learning to stand up Spider-Man, right?
Well, yeah,
like Jeff says. But then you do get the recap at the end where he's like, okay, one more time. My name is Miles Morales.
Yes, but the whole movie is Miles' origin.
Yes.
So I don't think it counts because like Miles is a different Spider-Man. It would be the same as if like... If we finally make a Batman Beyond movie, we're gonna do an origin because we need the origin for Terry.
Well, and Terry's not as in the zeitgeist.
Yep.
As like you've had like 5 Bruce Waynes in your lifetime at this point.
You mean in terms of actors?
Yeah.
If we don't count Adam West.
Yeah.
It was Adam West. There's Michael Keaton. There's Val Kilmer. There's George Clooney. There's Christian Bale.
And Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson. And there's the kid from Gotham.
Oh, yeah.
You can't forget them. So I've seen 7 live-action Bruce Waynes in my life.
Yeah.
Or that I've seen on screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, even Superman.
Did we say Ben Affleck?
We did not say Ben Affleck.
So we're 8. We're at 8. We're 8 Bruce Waynes.
Even Superman, who's had a lot less redos, I'm like, I think we all know Superman comes from Krypton and Krypton dies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could do one. I think you'd do it just like Superman and Lois. Now, Superman and Lois, when you think about it, like they were getting some layups from
Supergirl, yeah,
but even then, they didn't do his origin.
Yeah,
I think Supergirl does his origin at the beginning of the pilot, but it's very quick.
It is, and then
You know what? The pilot of Superman and Lois does do it. But they do it in a, I forgot about this, they do it sort of in the Frank Quitely All-Star Superman way, where they're just basically like, it's like doomed planet, kindly couple, he's now Superman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you can only do that based on the weight of like, we know who Superman is.
Well, yeah, because he's been around for 80 years. Again, he's like one of the most recognizable characters in all of pop culture is Superman.
Yeah, like I think my mom could tell you Superman's origin. But I don't know if she could tell you Batman's origin.
I bet your mom could tell you Batman's origin.
She's never seen a Batman movie.
But I think even just from like Batman 66 and the zeitgeist, I bet your mom.
But I know she's seen the Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yes. I know my mom could tell you Batman's origin.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think my mom has seen every Batman movie that I've seen.
It's interesting because when I was reading Adam's question and he specified characters with only one parent, which is the legal definition of an orphan, let me tell you from my personal experience, I thought of Spock immediately.
Really? Why?
Because Amanda's dead.
Well, like in TNG times, Amanda's dead.
Yeah, I don't know, but like I the first thing I went to was my brain was like, oh, like Spock.
Well, and Spock in TNG, which I mean, but in the main thrust of Spock's stories, which is the original Star Trek series,
yeah,
and Star Trek movies, Amanda's very much, Amanda's in Star Trek 4.
Okay, but then what about, let me ask you this then, because I'm thinking of the Kelvin of it all.
Yes, in the Kelvin of it all, he's an orphan.
Is George Kirk alive in TOS? Is he even mentioned in TOS?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he okay, so by the time
of by the time they rebooted it for the movies, they were like, what about orphans, though?
Yes, they were.
That's funny to
me.
So
they made Spock and Kirk super orphans.
Yeah, they did.
They are, you well done, stumbling on that. No, in TOS, Kirk's dad is dead by the time that TOS happens. But Kirk's dad saw him become a captain.
Didn't die tragically the way Chris Hemsworth dies at the beginning of Star Trek 09.
I think he just dies of old age, or or he dies.
Because, he dies very much off-panel.
Well, also, here's the big thing, too, that happens in the original series, if I'm remembering this right. So George Kirk, who is Kirk's brother, is around in the original series.
Yes, that is true.
You don't see him, but I believe he dies off camera.
Yes, you're right.
During an episode of TOS. Like, Kirk goes to his brother's planet, and then when he gets there, he finds all the people are dead.
He's dead, yeah.
And we don't really deal with that at all. And so one could also assume that Kirk's mom is still alive, but she's never mentioned.
Because Star Wars has a lot more super orphans than Star Trek does. Like, your original trio are all super orphans.
Yes. Although, with Han, we don't know.
Well, I always assumed he was.
One assumes.
I don't take the Solo origin. That's just my headcanon. But, like, even though, like, Luke and Leia were raised by adopted parents, like, they're not raised by their, like, and I think Leia definitely had a nicer upbringing.
Yes.
Because she was a princess.
Well, but here's the other weird thing, right? And I don't know, has it ever been established in canon? Does Leia know she's an orphan?
Leia knows she's adopted. She does, yes.
Leia does know she's adopted.
Does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because Luke knows. Well, Luke knows.
Well, so to be fair, that's established in the books. So it's really only how much you believe the Claudia Gray series. But yes.
Well, as far as I know, that is official canon.
We all until know canon is squishy.
Until 20 years from now when
they wipe it all out.
Henry
again.
Abrams, J.J. Abrams' son, gets a chance at Star Wars and he wipes it all out just like his dad did.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, I mean, I would assume that that's canon.
Yeah. It's canon, at least at the time of this recording.
There are a lot more super orphans than I thought there would be.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, every Disney character is a super orphan, so.
Yeah, there's too many.
That little girl duck and Darkwing Duck is a super orphan.
Well, you know, and then we go back to Adam's question, then it makes me just think that you're just like, well, is it a crutch now? Because, like, any writer is just like, well, how do I make this character, have a lot of passion or do this thing? Oh, duck killed her dad. Or it's kill their mom.
I don't think anyone thinks about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trope, but tropes are tropes for a reason, and not all tropes are bad. And I don't think it's the worst trope. I think there are far worse tropes that are miring superhero and genre storytelling than super orphans. Even Paul from Dune becomes a super orphan over the course of the first book.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So,
like, now it's like weird. Like, you could think about these other versions. You're like, oh yeah, there are like a lot of super orphans around-ish.
Yeah, but you're right. It's because we all have parents.
Well, it's so universal because, like, think about it. Right? You could do the same move with a husband or a wife.
Let's say a child.
Let's say there's a wife. And, you know, her husband tragically dies. And so her super arc is that she's going to get revenge on the killer of her child, you know, of her person. And, you know, if you've not been in a very serious relationship or you're a child, you wouldn't relate to that.
Yeah.
You wouldn't understand that revenge quest. So you're already cutting off. It's not a four quadrant idea. Whereas orphan, we all understand that.
Yes.
Everyone understands that.
Yeah.
And except for the clones that are listening. And hello, clones.
Superheroes only theoretically being four quadrant anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they kind of are and they kind of aren't.
You know who aren't super orphans? The Incredibles.
That's rare. That's fair.
So.
I will say this. I think you don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I prefer, actually, like, I loved the John Byrne Man of Steel version where Pa and Ma were still alive.
Oh, yeah?
Although I will say the character does work better if Pa is dead.
Superman, though, is still a super orphan whether or not the Kents are alive.
I know, but I was just, like, talking about that is, like, a very recent version where, like, he sort of had his parents. But, yes, I understand he's a super orphan no matter what. Poor Superman.
Poor Superman.
Poor Superman.
Okay, now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to wrap up. And we're going to wrap up with our favorite segment that we definitely remember every single time. And because we're driving... Jason is going to go first, but I'm going to tell him what his choice is today.
Yes, I sent Ashley my reading choices because I literally should not be looking at a phone right now.
Okay, Jason.
Yes.
So tell us about Metropolis Grove.
Oh, who's the author?
Drew Brockington.
Yeah, that's a DC Kids book that I forgot came out last year.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to our Discord over at the Patreon, some people were talking about it, and so I decided to read it out. It's a lovely kids book. I think it's for, like, ages 8 to 10.
It's their younger audience, like the same who their Super Pets line is.
But I will tell you, I still thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yay.
I liked it a lot. It's about some kids that kind of live in the suburbs of Metropolis. I can't remember if the suburb they live in is Metropolis Grove or not.
I would assume so.
I think it is, but don't quote me on that, everybody.
Okay.
But it's about these three kids. This new girl moves into the neighborhood, and they all, like, talk about, like, oh, do you think we'll ever meet Superman? Because, like, I don't know. Like, we never see Superman fly over our neighborhood and da-da-da-da-da. And then one of the kids meets Superman, and it complicates her life,
mm-hmm.
and I won't give everything about away because there's a really cool twist ending that I think is lovely. I had a lot of fun. If I had kids, I'd read this book to them, and since I don't have kids, I just read this book for myself, and I will tell you, as an adult, I still enjoyed it. I think it's a great read for any superhero fan.
Oh, I love that. That's
what are
so
you reading,
sweet.
Ashley? I got to take a drink.
That's fine. I am reading Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler, which is one of the great novels of the 20th century. It's one of the great novels written by a black author. It's one of the great novels written by a woman. And Jason and I recently went to the Huntington Library.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to read that soon. Yeah.
In Pasadena. And they had an original manuscript page from The Parable of the Sower. It's also one of the great science fiction books because it turns out women write some of the best science fiction in the world. And it was written in the 80s and early 90s, and it predicts... oh, climate change and the drop of the economy and some of our current tensions. And I'm really enjoying it, and gonna have to step up my game as a writer as a result of reading it.
Okay.
So there you go, Metropolis Grove and Parable of the Sower.
Why do you feel like you have to step up your game?
She's just, like, on a different level.
Oh, okay.
Than I operate on.
Well, I was like, don't throw yourself down. You're a good writer. What are you doing here?
Like, I mean that in, like, an aspirational kind of way,
okay.
Where you're like, oh wow, you can do this type of thing with with genre.
Yeah. It's always amazing though, for people that work in the creative field though, when that happens.
Yes.
I think when you just see somebody and you're just like, I can't do that.
I also had no idea before we went to the Huntington Library that she was, like, a Pasadena resident. I didn't realize that she was so close to the fabric of LA.
Well, on the rough streets of Pasadena, that's where you come up with the best story ideas, Ashley.
That's also where intern Brago comes from.
Yeah, he's born and raised in, or he wasn't raised, but he's born in Pasadena.
Born and thrown into a box in Pasadena,
he
California.
He was, until he was rescued by us.
By us.
That's right.
There you go.
Yep, that's right.
So, also thank you, Adam, for your question.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Is this how we end this?
This is, every time.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
Do we have a sign-off for this?
You go, how do we end this? And I say yes, and then we go, bye.
How do we end this?
I don't know, like this.
Oh, bye.
Bye.